Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives. Also, just a reminder that if you live in Michigan, Mississippi, Idaho, or Hawaii, you can vote today. So if you do, please vote wisely, and I'm sure we'll have conversation about that on Wednesday. We start actually on the Democratic side of the race today, Jim, in the good martini. There was a debate on CNN Sunday night. There was a town hall on Fox News Monday night. And in the CNN debate, Hillary Clinton once again going after Bernie Sanders on a number of things and doing her best on some issues to outflank him to the left, which is not easy to do. But it could come back to haunt her in the general. And that's what Grover Norquist, the head of Americans for Tax Reform, was pointing out on CNBC on Monday. He said she went way too far to the left on guns, to the point where Bernie Sanders actually said that if we follow Hillary's example, we might not even have guns left in the country. But the bigger issue for a lot of people, and Grover Norquist thinks in two critical states in particular, was Hillary Clinton essentially calling for wiping out fracking for all intents and purposes. Here's how Grover Norquist put it.
Under her new rules, fracking would exist almost nowhere because of the rules she wants to put in. Democrats used to be able to insult energy industry because they lived in Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, and Alaska. They don't vote Democrat. But she declared war on Pennsylvania and Ohio with that statement. That's not the way to win the election. It's how you lose it.
And so, Jim, this flanking to the left, there's a lot of good material for whoever the Republicans end up with as their nominee to go after Hillary Clinton for being so far left.
Yeah, I haven't really thought about that. We've kind of gotten used to Democrats being generally opposed to taking anything out of the ground. Everything but you should rely on windmills and solar, and that's going to be fine for our energy needs. But Norquist makes a really good point that this has become a very big part of the Ohio economy and a very big part of the Pennsylvania economy. So if Hillary's position is effectively total opposition to this, what does that mean in those states? How many voters who might otherwise be tempted to vote for the Democrats or not all that inclined to the Republicans are willing to vote for a candidate, presuming, of course, the Republican candidate goes to those states and hammers home the message that Hillary Clinton's administration will end your job. It will end this era of relatively inexpensive energy, and it will cause all kinds of problems. And look, this has been one of the rare economic success stories of the Obama era, this growth of these and this development of these jobs. And it's kind of fascinating that this hasn't gotten nearly as much attention. Maybe I suppose Hillary might totally pivot to the general election and abandon all this, but then she'd have problems with the environmentalists and the left. This is a kind of an easily ignored point. You could say with the gun issue, Obama was elected and reelected, but I don't think Obama ran rather vehemently in opposition to fracking in 2012. And had he, I think it would have hurt him more. And look, I think there's a great opportunity for Republicans here in two really important states.
Absolutely. In fact, Obama very much tried to muddy the waters in 2012 because Mitt Romney kept making the point that the expansion and the progress we were making in the energy industry was on private land and that the Obama administration had actually stunted progress on federal land. And Obama kept going back to very general statistics about the increase of energy production as a whole inside the United States. And whoever the Republican nominee is, they would be very smart to point out that a lot of people like having the number one at the beginning of their price per gallon at the gas pump. We hadn't been there for a while, and it's kind of nice, and I think most Americans would like to keep it there, and especially if they're living in a state where jobs are directly connected to that fact. So on to the bad martini now, and a double-barreled one. We found out, first of all, yesterday that the International Atomic Energy Agency says as a result of the new Iran nuclear deal, they're not really allowed to come forward publicly to announce any violations Iran may have with its nuclear program. That's awfully convenient. And now even more disturbing from the New York Times, quote, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps of Iran staged nationwide ballistic missile tests on Tuesday, Iranian state television reported, though the accounts did not specify whether the military had fired any ballistic missiles capable of carrying a nuclear warhead, which would violate a United Nations resolution. Missiles were fired from several silos in different regions of the country, state television reported. So, Jim, the news just gets worse and worse and worse with this, but I'm sure Iran is worried about violating that UN resolution.
You kind of marvel. On the one hand, I understand, look, the economy is going on. There's always going to be a lot of attention on the presidential race. The rise of ISIS, there's a lot of things going on. So people may not have Iran front and center in their minds right now. But if you pay attention to these things, the Iran deal is not working out. They are not moderating. They are not being nicer. They are not being more cooperative. They keep just giving us new ways of either giving us the finger or other efforts to kind of demonstrate that they will not moderate or change their tone from this. And I guess the administration's, you know, approach here is to say, well, if we just ignore it long enough, if we act like it's not a big deal, the public will act like it's not a big deal. We always expected this. We completely didn't promise the opposite. We didn't, you know, insist that there was going to be this giant change and this, you know, huge step towards greater cooperation with Iran. And it's deeply frustrating. And, if you know, you have this nagging feeling that this will go from being a low-level crisis to being a high-level crisis right around the time the next president takes office, which is pretty much the way Barack Obama wanted it.
Between this and the sailors and money going for terrorism and just everything.
Take your pick. It's a buffet of bad behavior.
All right. On to the crazy martini now. And this one will probably take up the bulk of the podcast, giving the different complexities of the story. CNN yesterday coming out with a story that there's some internal dissension within the Marco Rubio campaign. And I'll let her tell the story here. But basically, the idea is that they're worried that if he loses Florida and potentially loses convincingly, it might not only obviously damage his current presidential campaign severely, but his long-term political prospects.
We were told that there's been a serious internal debate by a very knowledgeable source. And that debate is about whether or not he should drop out before Florida. That source told us that top advisors have told Rubio that they do not see a path to the nomination, and they're advising him to get out before Florida for a simple reason. They don't want him, quote, to get killed in his home state, and they're afraid that a poor showing would be a risk and hurt his political future, whether someday he might want to run for governor or being considered for vice president. Now, for the record, Alex Conant, the communications director for the Rubio campaign, came on our air last hour. He was very upset about this report. He said it was not true, that there is no dissent within the campaign, and once again repeated that Rubio was staying in. But we double-checked with our source, who confirmed that our story was 100% correct.
Okay, Jim. So about 2 seconds after this story first aired, the Cruz campaign was out with emails, and I think there might have even been some robocalls. I think that's still being investigated, suggesting that the Rubio campaign is debating whether to get out. The Rubio campaign getting out there to say that this is not true. CNN still has the story up, so they're obviously standing by it. When you're fighting off reports that your campaign's about to implode, that's terrible for Rubio. CNN, once again, all on its own here with a story that doesn't seem to have a ton of great corroboration. The Cruz campaign, once again, just like in Iowa, perhaps jumping the gun too early. And you could say, Jim, a couple of things here. First of all, if they are behind it, as some folks on Rubio Twitter seem to think so, obviously that's a horrific thing to do and ought to be condemned roundly. At the same time, even if it's something that is happening, it seems stupid on the part of the Cruz campaign to jump all over this when they would, in the long run, be trying to woo Rubio people. But what do you make of all this?
I was going to say, my first thought, and you kind of alluded to that, Greg, is what are the odds of a vaguely worded CNN report being cited and hyped by the Cruz campaign, insisting that a Republican rival of Cruz is about to drop out right before a really big contest that he's put enormous resources into? What are the odds? Lightning strikes twice, and I don't know. You know, I had put up last night a photo of Cruz talking on the phone, and I had him saying, "Yes, this is totally a senior Rubio advisor. Honestly, I want you to know, a lot of us are telling Rubio to get out." And the Cruz fans are like, "How dare you make that accusation? It's a joke. It's a tweet." I don't think that Ted Cruz impersonated a senior Rubio advisor and told Jamie of CNN to do this. Having said that, CNN does not look good here, because the first report said sources say, and then you end up with the one person who they heard this from. The Rubio campaign insists they were not given any chance to respond to this or to give any response. That is bad journalism.
Right.
And let's just use kind of basic common sense here that, like, you know, first of all, Rubio, you really got to drop out now. Otherwise, you'll hurt your gubernatorial campaign in 2018. What do you think Rubio really wants to do? He wants to win the presidency, right? We'll worry about that in 2018. Yeah, if he loses the primary really bad, he loses the primary really bad. But if you quit the primary, then you're known as the guy who didn't even bother to compete in your home state primary because it looked so bad. I don't see how this necessarily would help Rubio. And so I didn't quite buy it. She's obviously relying on one source here. Obviously, most of the Rubio supporters are totally into it. And again, like, do you see Marco Rubio dropping out right before all of the people who've been with him his entire life? With him in all of that first state house race, with him in that 2010 Senate race, do you think he's going to drop out right before all those people get the chance to vote for him?
No, he's been pointing to this for weeks and even months.
He's spent like $1 billion in this state. Why is he going to quit right before? You know, like, if you run and you lose, you lose. You know, and it's frustrating, it's disappointing, but you gave it your best shot. If you quit right before the big contest, you'll never know whether you could have won or not. Nothing about it really made much sense, other than like maybe there's one Rubio supporter, allegedly senior, although they never really get very specific about the role this person has in the campaign. Could be Irving Schmidlap, who, you know, gives a lot of unsolicited advice, who tells CNN, oh yeah, I'm totally telling him to quit. First of all, do you really think you're helping Marco Rubio by calling up CNN and saying, yeah, I'm totally telling him to get out. There's no way he wins. He's going to get slaughtered. With friends like this, Greg, who needs enemies?
That's exactly right. Yeah, I think you pretty much have this right at this point, given all the logistics and the realities of the race right now. It's somebody probably lower than they would like Jamie Gangel to think, who came up with this idea, offered it up, was roundly condemned, and said, well, I still think this. So there's disagreement. There's dissension in the campaign. And sometimes that's how stories get legs that shouldn't necessarily have legs. But
somebody who really thought they had a good shot at the gig to be Rubio's campaign manager for governor in 2018.
Mike Murphy, when will you stop?
He'll get blown to hell if he wins the presidency. We can't let that happen.
Will Mike Murphy just stop with this? I mean, the super PAC for Jeb is over. Let's move on. I mean, come on. Jim, it's never dull, though.
No, it isn't. It's exciting. Look, we'll know more at the end of the day. We'll know even more a week from now. And get out there and vote, people. Make your voice heard. Worse than it is so far.
It's the rich enthusiasm in your voice there, Jim, that's really
I say powerful. You can't make any worse than it already is. And I'm sure right now the voters in these states are saying, challenge accepted, Mr. Garrity.
Oh, can't wait. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.